Welcome to the She's Electric podcast. We're in the business of helping you to be your best self.
Click subscribe so we can help you have more money, more success, more love, more laughter, and more time for you. I'm Pia.
And I'm Kaya. Now let's get on with this episode.
Thank you for joining us for another episode of the She's Electric podcast. Today, I have asked Kaya if we can really focus in on a topic that is just so close to my heart, and that is food. There's a lot of things happening in the food industry that I think the man and woman on the street is not aware of. And I want to use this episode today to just reveal a few things and ask for your help. So before I start, I want to just ask a question, which is, do we love our children? Seems like a stupid question. Do we love our children? But when I look at what we're doing through our food, what we are doing to the planet, it does make me question that. So I just want you to put that question in the back of your head as you listen to this. We have created a food system that it puts such an immense load on the planet that it's not even sustainable for a few decades, let alone a few hundred years. Since World War II, we really focused in on maximizing efficiency and maximizing yield. And that was really necessary at the time, because after two world wars, people were starving. They were quite literally starving, and we didn't know how to feed the planet. And there were certain processes that were invented around then. One was a way of synthesizing ammonia. It greatly reduced the cost of producing chemical fertilizers. This was a groundbreaking piece of technology at its time. And about 40% of the world's population owe their existence to this invention, because it allowed food to be produced at a scale that stopped famine. It stopped starvation. I'm not against progress, but I think in the context of today's world, today's challenges that we are facing, we need to redefine what progress actually means. By focusing purely on yield and maximizing efficiency, we've created a commodity-based food system. Big food companies know that it's more profitable to grow a small number of things at maximum efficiencies. And then what they do is they use flavorings, colors, thickeners, and gums, and then they market them in very clever ways to make us believe that they are different. But they've all been grown from very similar crops. And so through doing this for basically since the end of World War II, we have shrunk the diversity of our entire food system down to 12 plants and 5 animals. So we used to have a massively array of different things that we would have eaten. We were hunter-gatherers. We would have eaten different plants, different berries. And now it's just think of what's on the back of lots of packs. Palm oil, maize, sugar, wheat, soya. It's all these monocrops. If you can just look at what is happening on a global scale, so 75% of the calories eaten on the planet are controlled by 6 companies. 6. This is not to scare you. This is not to overwhelm people, but it is to say that is an incredibly dangerous place for us to have our food system. So if any of those companies decide to do something different, if they decide that they want to raise prices, we're at their mercy. And it's much more insidious than just what's on the supermarket shelves. These companies, they control our agricultural practices. They control the fertilizers. They control the seeds. So it's all this intricate system. And they've actually created it's a clever system that has funneled the majority of profits in the food industry to their shareholders. And so if you look at in the supermarket, for every 1 euro spent in the supermarket, about 15 cent only goes to the growers and the farmers and the packers and the people who are actually doing the work. It's the big brands that take the lion's share. The food industry is one of the most exploitative industries in the world. In my own country, in Ireland, we have farmers who are working 3 jobs just to make ends meet. And so if you look at the meat industry, meat processing plants are one of the most dangerous places to work. We need to be protecting the people growing our food and making our food instead of exploiting them. And I just want to share a story, Kaya, you know, about the great famine that happened in Ireland. It displaced millions of people. And Ireland didn't own its own food supply. We're sitting here now in 2024. Kaya, you're from the UK. I'm from Ireland. We are such good friends. As two nations, I think the Irish and the English are very close. However, I think that we need to learn from this situation, which is the Irish people didn't own their own food supply. And what happened was when the local crop that everybody ate, which was potatoes, when that suffered a blight, the English were taking the crops. There was no lack of food being grown in this country, but it was all being funneled over to the UK market. So what happened was the Irish people starved. And what I'm trying to say here is if we are just focusing on 12 crops, if something happens to one of those crops, you would have mass starvation on a global scale, because it's not just a local diet anymore. We actually have a global diet.
It's so interesting to hear you talking about that, because I've never really thought about it in that way. And I'm somebody who considers myself to be really passionate about food and well-informed. And actually, when you were saying that and you were talking about the 12 crops and the five animals, I was thinking, what are the 12 crops? And then as you started listing them off, I was like, oh. And I guess what's really, I love the story that you shared about Ireland, because you're right. I was actually talking to my mum at the weekend. I was saying the thing about globalization is that the dependencies do create safety. Lots of time people talk about it and they think it makes the world dangerous, and they're thinking about the situation in Russia and with the Ukraine and what's happened with gas supplies and things like that around the world. But it also, it does make us all geared towards a common goal. But the thing about that is those are political organizations. When you've got, as you rightly pointed out, six companies controlling everything, those companies are not democratically elected. They don't have a population behind them, holding them to account or able to protest or able to put pressure on them. It's really interesting when you put it out there like that. As usual, when we're not in an industry, we're seeing a surface layer of it. We don't really understand what's going on. And actually, well, the point that you're making here is that even if you're on an individual level, focusing on the kind of nutritional needs of your family and you're careful about where you get your food, the stability of the nation that you live in is different to that.
Yeah. The stability of any nation is really dependent on its ability to feed people. And I have seen such a massive degradation of our diet. What I ate as a kid is completely different to what I see kids eating nowadays. And that is very much controlled by these companies. These companies control what we eat. They control what is marketed at us, what we see, what is grown. So you think you have choice, but actually you don't. And if you look at it, this is just one example. The dip market, 88% of the global dip market is controlled by PepsiCo.
Wow, that's nuts.
Yeah. Isn't it? It's absolutely nuts. So these are massive monopolies that exist, but the impact of that on the environment is huge. There is no greater contributor to biodiversity loss than the food industry. Because just think about it. If you're growing 2 hectares and hectares of soya for your soya-based snacks and things, then you're killing the biodiversity in that area. Yeah. Because that's not how the world works. There is a very intricate ecosystem where certain crops will feed certain things and insects will feed these things. And the problem is, once you have ecosystem collapse, you can't get it back. We like to think that we have the technology to do this, but we actually don't. And what does ecosystem collapse mean? It means, for example, no fish in the ocean, that the sea levels become too acidic, the fish can't survive in it. And then all of a sudden, that means that there's no plant life there either. It means that life on Earth would be untenable. What has all this progress led us to? What situation has it created? So we've maximized yield, we've maximized efficiency. We've got these 12 plants and these five different animals. But we've actually created a world where we are simultaneously overfed and undernourished. The foods that we make are full of calories. Yep,
so we're fat and stupid.
Oh, I didn't want to say that, but they have so much sugar in them and so many refined carbohydrates, but they actually don't have any nourishment. And when I look at it, I look at the food industry. And what I've really noticed by working in this industry is that the business model of these food companies is diametrically opposed with the well-being of consumers, because it's about maximizing the profits. So reducing your costs as much as possible, using the cheapest possible ingredients and selling as much as you possibly can.
Can we just pause on that point? Because I think that's like a massive, you've said it, but that's basically the whole problem, is that the people who are in control, like their vision and their goal is not just different, it's actually in opposition to their customers.
Yeah.
And basically the whole world.
Yes.
Which is so weird. That's so strange to have a situation like that, where it's in complete opposition. So it's, if we want the world to be more biodiverse, if we want people to have higher levels of nutrition, if we want there to be more stability in the food chain, we want there to be more equity distribution throughout the food chain and throughout the world, that can't happen. Like, we say we want all those things, but the people who are the puppet masters controlling it all want the complete opposite. It's wild. It's so strange.
We've actually forgotten what is the purpose of food. The purpose of food is to nourish us. And I work with these food producers every day, and people say things like, oh, food companies are evil. But I see food producers, these are privately owned, family-run businesses, and they are working themselves to the bone, and they are not earning any money. Back to that, every 15 cents spent in the supermarket, that's what goes to the farmer. The rest goes to the big food companies. It's not just the farmer. That goes to the farmers, the growers, the packers, the transport company. The other bit goes to the retailer, and it goes to the big food company. So the distribution of profits is misaligned as well. The people who are trying to do something good, I'm seeing all these healthy food movements pop up, right? And it's like the little kindling on a fire. It's just this little flame. And they're trying so hard. But then over time, the entire system is just working against them. And they don't have enough cash flow to keep the business going. And then they end up going out of business. To put it in perspective, some of the clients that I work with, once they get into the retail sector, one client said, retail has not been good to us. Ever since we went into it, our profits have eroded. Another client said that since going into retail, I have doubled my turnover, but my profits are the same as they were 10 years ago. So he said, right now we're doing double the amount of work for the same amount of money.
It's like, what's the point? As you were talking about the kindling, the thought that's been brewing, I was talking about this with a family member over the weekend, where we were having a conversation, and she kept bringing up London. And I was like, but London isn't England. And I'm also like, London, where you live, is middle class, right? That is not representative. You can't keep talking about your experience as if it's like the this UK bubble. And if it's Great Britain and if it's representative. Because, for example, when I was living in London, I was shopping in places like Planet Organic or in Whole Foods, even when I was shopping in the big supermarkets, and I'm buying brands that are local, and I've got the money to do it. That's not representative of what the general trends are. It's what I think is really interesting in the world is that a lot of people who are, they've got podcasts, they're on television, they're influencers, right? They fall into that upper category.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So
we have this image that, like, you don't see a lot of the big brands, they're not on Instagram all the time.
Yeah.
PepsiCo is not running its Instagram account.
No. You know,
they're doing media, mass media, like on billboards and running adverts and stuff like that. But it's almost like we have a bit of a like fake perspective of what's really going on, because so many people who are out in the public sphere and are influencing are in this really small category, and they don't represent the general population. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes complete sense. And it's easy to look at these foodie hubs like London. London is a food mecca.
Yeah.
Food trends start in London. But then when you go out into rural Ireland, it's a completely different way of eating. There's a different approach to food. And it's the same in the UK. When you go outside of London, it's not this massively diverse diet. It's people trying to survive.
And there are affluent pockets all over the country, which people,
middle-class
people will bring up. But that's not the general population.
No.
And it's interesting because as I've moved to Portugal and here, the food system's very different. There's basically like raw ingredients. So there's just like vegetables.
Yeah.
Or there are like those big brands that you're talking about who control everything. So it's like if you go in the condiment aisle, for example, like all of the stock cubes are made by the same company. And you know what? Yeah. I literally, because I'm interested in the ingredients on a pack, I'm like, the quality of the stock cubes is so bad. Like, it's the same company, but they're making a worse product in Portugal.
Yeah.
But there's no competition.
Absolutely.
They're the only option.
So you think you have choice, but you don't. And there is a fundamental problem in how we are growing food nowadays is actually, it's making it far less nutrient dense than it would have been for our grandparents. So I was blown away when I did the hair tissue mineral analysis after having Rafi. I was shocked to see that I am malnourished. I'm actually malnourished. And Kaya, I would guarantee that you are malnourished. And I think if anybody is sitting here, they're listening in the developed world, following a standard sort of Western diet, you are also malnourished. Because I just want to share some stats. It's going to show you, it's going to put this in context, that eggs that are from pasture-raised hens. So these are hens that are free to roam outside, to peck, to do things that hens are supposed to do. Those eggs have 6 times more omega-3 than eggs from chickens that are kept inside, that are kept in barns. Even though it says free-range eggs, they're still kept indoors. They're kept in very small places. They're not in cages, but they pretty much are. And then, but we say these words free-range and people think that they're outside. The word you actually need to look for is pasture-raised. But then also, if you look at cows and pigs that are raised on regenerative farms using regenerative agriculture, they have 11 times more omega-3 than conventionally raised cows. And then if you look at regenerative grown wheat, so part of a regenerative system, grown in these systems have 48% more calcium and 56% more zinc. So the micronutrients, when you grow food in the way that it's meant to be grown, the way that it was grown before World War One, you're actually getting so much more nutrition. And I've had this conversation so much with my mother. She's what's wrong with your generation? You all seem so stressed, and it's like you can't handle life, and everybody's worn out. And I've really been thinking about that question. Like, why does it feel like our generation can't? A lot of people I know, they can't tolerate coffee anymore. They get very antsy from coffee. They are completely burnt out. They are stressed. I think it's actually a lot of things interplaying in our society. So we are definitely overworked. Company profits over the last 30 years have gone up. But if you look at people's salaries adjusted for inflation, we're actually earning less than our parents earned. So people are actually working more because our productivity has gone up. Our outputs have gone up, yet we're coming home with less. And I know, living in Ireland now, myself and my husband earn a good salary, yet our childcare costs are astronomical. And there's much higher interest rates nowadays. So our mortgage cost is really high. So we're earning great money, but we get taxed so much. And by the end of the month, we have nothing. We have no chance to save. So you have food being less nutritious, and then you have people being overworked. And then you hand people very addictive devices, so social media and things like that. And it means that everybody is running on empty. It's constant stimulation, yet no feeding back into your body. And so people are burnt out.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think that what I was really loving about what you were saying, and we always like things that align with our own opinions. I personally have been a proponent of supplementation for such a long time. Mm. And I've had so many bloody arguments with people about it, where they tell me it's not natural. Why do they want to put this? Yada. Mm. And it's to do with, it's like the counteracting to being malnourished. It's like you cannot physically get, even eating organic foods, the amount of omega-3 that you need. You need to take a fish oil. If you want to protect your brain, like, you need to take high quality supplements. I really believe that. And I think it's so interesting. That's like a fringe opinion. I also find it entertaining when people who are in a different generation to us share opinions about our generation. Mm. And I think it's one of those things that the world is always changing. The challenges of one generation to the next change. And I was having this conversation with my mum recently, where I said to her, in her generation, the dynamics between couples now are very different than they were in her generation. Our generation are really the first generation that have choice. It was like a fake choice in her generation, where there were still so many barriers, right? Mm. There were so many barriers to women even being able to control their own body, right? Like having enough information about when they were going through the menopause. There were so many things that were limiting women that don't exist now, because she was talking about people wanting to have children and that kind of stuff. And I said, it's just that the world has changed so much in a short period of time. Mm. And so the challenges that are facing women now are different to the challenges that you faced. One is not harder than the other, but they are different. But I think that where your mum is saying, God, there's like almost a lack of resilience in our generation. But in their generation, there was this subservience. There was this like anger, because it was still a man's world, right? And it's still a man's world right now, but most of my friends are not doing the majority of anywhere near the kind of lion's share of housework that our mothers were doing.
Agreed. Yeah.
No way. I'm not saying that that's not happening in a lot of countries around the world, but in cities like London, that shit just, it's just not norm anymore. There are people who want to be homemakers and that's their choice. But like when you've got both people working, you don't have that same kind of gender imbalance that existed for our parents.
Yeah, you don't. And that is progress in the right way. I've talked about this a lot, about the balancing of the feminine and the masculine, that the world is out of balance. And this whole thing in our food industry about progress, yield, production, efficiency, that is too much of the masculine energy. Now going back into a nurturing system, regenerative farming, that is the feminine. And you need both. You can't just have a lovely nourishing system that's, you're not getting it out to anybody. It's an inefficient system and it's not maximizing the yield, but it's the balance of the two. And so the thing you said about supplementation, so I'm in between. I'm not team supplementation. I think supplementation is only necessary because we have depleted our soil, because we have depleted our food system. Now, that said, having gotten the hair tissue mineral analysis, I cannot believe the difference to my life since taking a B12 supplement. I cannot believe the difference. And if you look at a conventionally raised food, it has far less B vitamins in it.
See, I think it's wild for anyone not to be taking B12. So that's what's so interesting to me, is that I'd say for a decade, I think it was nuts for anyone not to be taking B12, because it's almost a guarantee that you do not have enough B12 in your diet, regardless of which meat you eat.
Completely. But I would love to create a system, and I know it's possible because I've seen how quickly our diet has gotten bad and how quickly we've depleted everything. And I know that we can actually turn it around and build it back up just as quickly. But this is why it's about asking people who have disposable income to vote with their pound. And if you look at a regenerative farm and you look at a conventional farm, there's some incredible studies. You can just find them online. I'll actually link to them in the show notes. The soil on a regenerative farm is dark. It's black. It's thick. It's full of nutrients. And then if you look at a conventional farm, it's very light brown and it's crumbly. There's nothing in it. And they need fertilizers and all these additions to try and just squeeze anything out of it. And so you can literally see in front of you why something is nutritious or why it's not. So I don't think we should need supplementation, but we have created a system where it is necessary. But I want to get into what can you do, because I don't want people to feel overwhelmed. I don't want people to go, oh my God, the entire system is fucked. What are we going to do? What are we going to do? It's about shifting the balance of power away from these big food companies. And I have been, especially since getting the hair tissue mineral analysis, I'm really shocked that I'm as malnourished as I am. And I am someone who really looks after my diet. We eat really well. We eat loads of vegetables, but I have been buying from the supermarkets. I buy from the supermarkets. And for years, I wasn't even buying organic. I was just buying whatever was there. And I know in the UK and Ireland, when I go out and I buy a tomato, it tastes like nothing. When I eat a carrot, it tastes like nothing. And then I go to places like Portugal or Italy, and you're going to these local markets where the food is grown locally in that area. And the tomatoes taste incredible. Flavor equals phytochemicals. It equals nutrients. So I have been on a journey to try and actually move my money away from the big supermarkets and move it directly to the growers and the producers of our food. So you will find that there are regenerative agriculture systems within your country. So there will be farmers that are following these practices. And the beauty of the internet and technology, what's happening is that it's never been easier to set up an e-commerce website. So a lot of these growers, you can actually buy directly from them. I buy all of my produce from a grower in the west of Ireland. He follows a regenerative system, so he's boosting biodiversity. I'm also now starting to buy my meat from a place called Fiorbia. That is a regenerative farm. So all the animals are regeneratively raised. And it's an incredible system where the cows, for example, they sequester more carbon than they produce. It's a particular breed of cow called Dexter. They're a much smaller cow. And when they eat the grass, it'll need 30 days for the grass to regenerate. So they're moved from field to field. So the herd can only be as big as his land will accommodate. And so when the cows are in the field and they poo everywhere, He then sends in chickens, and the chickens come in and they eat all of the parasites in the poo. And that stops the cows from getting sick. It stops them from needing antibiotics. But if you cut to a conventional system where the cows are left, they're in confined spaces, they are standing in their own excrement all day, and it is inhumane to make cows to live this. And then because they're in such confined conditions, they end up needing antibiotics. And so we have so many antibiotics in our food system, and it's leading to huge microbial resistance, to the point that if you listen to Bill Gates talk about this, we are heading towards a situation where a woman, if she needs an emergency C-section, she won't be able to get it, because it will be more dangerous for her to have the C-section because of potential resistance to antibiotics that she needs to take and the superbugs that are developing, than for her to actually have the labor unassisted. So is that a situation we want for our daughters?
Yeah, it's interesting, because as you were talking about it, it was reminding me of a conversation which I have had many times about, I really am passionate about organic food and supporting organic farming. And it's something that I've really, probably not that artfully, but pushed on my family and my inner circle for a long time. But one of the things that people often say is, it's not accessible, it's not a solution, because most people can't afford organic food. And I think the thing to remember is that if you can, then you should.
That's exactly the point. Thank you for saying that.
At the top to invest and to bring the costs down for other people, and to know that you're the early adopters to support the thing that is right, not to just be like, oh, fuck it all. And it's like, there's a double win. One, as you were talking about the antibiotic stuff, like, how can not, if you can afford not to give your children organic food, organic meat, why are you not giving them organic meat? The food costs should be one of your biggest costs, because that is your building blocks for the future, the building blocks of the health of your family, of their well-being. But I think the thing about food is, it's one of those things that people, like, they're borrowing from the future. They don't understand the consequences of all of these small things building up. It's a bit like with your phone. Oh, just 5 minutes here, 5 minutes there, 5 minutes here. And it's, but over a long time, this inability to concentrate is compounding. And it's the same with our food. Every single time that you are giving low quality food to yourself and to your family, over a period of time, those things build up. You're talking about us not having enough nutrition, and that's one side of the coin. But the other side of the coin is that we're having all of these chemicals, all of these antibiotics going into our body that are literally changing our body and our ability to function cognitively, or to receive medicine, like you were talking about, antibiotics. So I think it's what's amazing about places like London is that right now there are farmers markets everywhere. You can go to a farmers market and you can get the best quality produce from very close. They have amazing organic offerings, right? They also have quite a few stalls there who I notice, I've seen it at my own farmers market, they're a lot cheaper than the other stalls, and they're basically like a supermarket version undercover in the farmers market. So all stalls are not created equal. And as a consumer, it's your responsibility to understand, to ask a couple of questions about the farm. Any farm who is doing good things will have information available and will be happy to share it with you. If somebody selling something doesn't know any information about where the produce comes from, then that's giving you information too.
I'm so glad, first of all, that you brought up what is the true cost of our food? Because when you look at food that's really cheap and you're buying a chicken that is €5 in the supermarket, bearing in mind the retailer takes about a 30% margin, so the farmer is getting nothing for that chicken. What conditions does that chicken have to grow up in to reach that price point? So cheap food is cheap in the short term, but it has a huge cost in the long term. And we are putting that cost on the next generation. So the first thing that I want to say to people is, don't get overwhelmed. When I talk to consumers about the food industry, the first thing they say is, it's just so confusing, it's so overwhelming. And just remember, this is not about perfection. It's actually about making small incremental changes and just going, okay, how can I do a little bit better? So like Kaya said, find out where there's a local farmer's market and make a day of it. Go with your kids, get them involved, turn it into something that's actually really fun. And I know that the only way that we're going to get out of this ultra processed food cycle is to actually bring nutrition training into schools. That has to happen. Kids have to have a better connection with their food instead of just getting these highly addictive food like substances put on their plate. But until that happens, and we could be waiting, our kids could be growing up before the policymakers actually change things. So take that in your own hands, get them involved, get them understanding where our food goes, get them talking to farmers. It's actually amazing what's happening in Ireland right now, that there are some farm programs where farmers are getting supplemental income by bringing schools into their farms to show them how things are grown, how chickens are raised. And that's another way that we can protect farmers. Farmers shouldn't be working in the local post office and working odd jobs just to survive. We should be actually doing things that helps to protect them. And the best, one of the best ways of us sequestering carbon from the environment is by taking parts of farmland and turning it into biodiverse ecosystems where there's different trees, different plant life, there's hives, there's all these things. All of this is available to us, but it involves the consumer supporting that instead of just taking the easy choice, which is the retailer. And I understand that, but the costs, we are putting the costs onto our children.
And even within the retailer, like if you do need to go to a big supermarket, like in the UK now, all of the big supermarkets have a really broad selection of organic food, and it's much cheaper than buying it at a farmer's market. So it's, there's the middle ground where you can get particular things like legumes, like pasta, where the difference between the non-organic version and the organic version, it's achievable for a lot of people. It's a small amount, right?
Absolutely. There's some other
products where it's much bigger. And the other thing is to buy seasonal. If you buy what's in season, it will always be much cheaper.
Yeah, definitely. Because they're trying to get rid of it. You'll always see it on offer. And that's the thing. So I used to buy my entire shop from the retailer. I still go weekly. Like, I'm not pretending that I'm perfect here. But what I've done is I am buying my meat from a regenerative system. I'm buying my produce from a regenerative farm agriculture system. And then I'm buying my staples and my things from supermarket. Now, I am working towards creating an environment in my home where I'm getting deliveries from all the different food companies and I'm only buying mineral things from the retailers. There's no greater way to force people to change than when they start to see all the money move into the parts of the industry that we want to promote. And then the retailers will start listening. But what happens is right now is the retailer has so much control over the supply chain that they want to buy from a grower. And then they start to tell them, this is what we'll pay. So it's not a case of the grower saying, this is what it costs me and this is what I need to charge. The retailer just says, this is what we're going to pay, take it or leave it.
So what are your top tips for somebody who is already feeling a little bit overwhelmed by this conversation? Like, where should they start? What would be like three small things that they could do, that they could start thinking about, that would begin to shift the needle for them, for their family, for their country?
Mm-hmm. Okay, so the first one, as I said, is do not get overwhelmed, right? This is about small, little micro improvements. So it's looking at what you buy every week and going, okay, so how could I improve? One very simple improvement you could make is instead of buying oats, just normal oats, please buy organic oats, because the highest levels of glyphosate are found in oat products. Those crops are just sprayed with glyphosate. And it's really disappointing to see that glyphosate use was approved for another 10 years in the EU. It's such a detrimental chemical to ecosystems that it should be completely banned, but it's not. There's a lot of very powerful companies behind this. So buy organic oats. That's actually incredibly cheap. And then go, okay, so I'm doing a shop once a week in the retailer. Okay, so let's go to the farmer's market once a month. Just once. Bring your kids, just go and just have a play around with the different foods. Have a look at them. And just when you do it once, you'll start to see that it's actually not so hard. Okay, so the next one is buy direct from the people who produce your food where possible. So find growers in your area who are growing all your own produce. They are the meat companies. And where possible, so you've talked a lot about organic, Kaya, but what I'm saying is beyond organic, it's regenerative. Totally. So the majority of organic produce is grown using the conventional system in that depleted soil. But a regenerative system is actually building back, it's nourishing the soil. And if we don't do that, we're actually going to have a situation where our future generations cannot grow food because we are depleting the soil at such a phenomenally quick rate. So buy direct from growers. There are, if you just, I'll link to some in Ireland anyway, so that you can see, and we'll link to some in the UK, that there are, if you just Google it, you will find people who are selling online. And look for words like pasture raised. So eggs that are from pasture raised hens, pasture raised pigs. So outdoor reared as opposed to free range, because free range is a very, it's not very revealing. And then also just get your kids involved. So kids are actually incredibly interested in food when you show them what it's about. It's when we disempower kids and we put food in front of them and just say, hey, eat this. Of course, you're not going to want to eat this. It is hard. Like it's so much easier to just make the food and plonk it in front of your child. But really when, like I'm growing some veg in the garden right now, I have no interest in doing it, to be honest. It's just, it is work. And I'm at a stage in my life where I just don't want to do this right now, but we're not actually growing it really to eat it. We're growing it to growing some strawberries. We might get 6 strawberries from the amount that I'm growing, but it's to show Enzo where food comes from. It's to grow the cherry tomatoes and to show him that this is how food is grown. And then when kids start to see that, I couldn't get Enzo to eat a tomato when he was really young until we started growing it. And then he went out to the tree and he picked the cherry tomatoes. So getting kids involved is actually a really interesting way to spend your time. It's the getting them out from behind a screen, but it's also getting them an appreciation of food. Because a lot of the challenges we have in the food industry, it's not going to be solved by our generation. It'll probably be solved by their generation. So we need to foster that interest now.
What I think is really exciting about everything that you've been saying today is that whilst there is one side, which is, it's like with everything, people can feel like worried and God, everything's so bad. I also just feel so excited because never before have the conditions been so ripe and has the barrier to entry been so low for women, for independent businesses to come into business, to sell their products online. Like we have all of the tools available to us to do that. And so I am so excited for the next decade and 2 decades to come because things are going to change. And it's because of the conditions that exist in the world right now that are taking away the gatekeepers and they are opening up the world, opening up the market to people who want to do something different.
Hallelujah. I literally cannot agree more that this is why I want to bring this up because the world is changing. So that very closed system that's funneling the majority of profits towards a few companies, it's all being opened out. The door, the ceiling's being knocked off. And so that's why it's so easy nowadays for a farmer can set up an e-commerce website and he can sell direct. Now, there's certain challenges in that. He has to have packers. He has to have a slaughterhouse facility. So there are those things, but the ones that are doing it. So I'm working with a regenerative farmer right now, and it's incredible what he's doing. He has an online website. You buy these packs of meat and he freezes them because it's his best way of preserving it is freezing it. And so people need to understand that a frozen product is not a cheap product. It's actually very nutrient dense and it preserves a lot of the nutrients and preservatives don't need to be added to extend shelf life. So you get these frozen boxes from him, but his demand has now gotten so much that he's buying from regenerative farms in the area and he's actually going to local farmers and he's showing them how to create a regenerative system in their farm. So he's taking conventional farmers and turning them into regenerative farmers. So as a consumer, if you support companies like that, the knock-on effect is absolutely huge because not every farmer is going to want to set up an e-commerce website, but if we can funnel through the ones that do, then all of a sudden, the supermarkets will start to see, geez, we're not selling our chicken. Why is no one buying our chicken? And then they start to investigate and then they are forced to change.
It's a whole new world out there.
It is a whole new world. And it's all there for the taking. So I just want to circle back to that question. Do we love our children? And I've thought about this myself. It's ever since I had Enzo and now that I've had Rafi that I used to go in and I would just buy the standard chicken and I wouldn't think about it. And now when you look even at the free range chicken versus just the standard chicken, the standard chicken is very fatty. It has a lot of blood clots in it. If you really look into it, it does. And that's because the chickens are in such confined circumstances. If you look at how pigs are allowed to be raised under EU law, it is shocking. There's a thing called tail docking because the pigs are kept in such close confinement that they bite each other's tails off. So their tails are docked to stop them from doing that. And a pig is as intelligent as a three-year-old. So my son just turned three. And when I think about how they are kept, I've been in a pig slaughterhouse and it is horrific, to the point that when I was there, I have never bought conventionally raised pork anymore. But it's just to say, is this the kind of food industry that we want to pass on to our kids? Our kids' generation are the first generation that are on track to live 10 years less than us because of the lack of nutrients in their food, because they have been diverted over to this ultra processed diet. Is that the world we want for them? Thank you for giving us your time. Did you know that you could change someone's day today just by sharing this episode?
Our mission is to help women. We all want more money, more success, more love, more laughter, and more time for ourselves.
Women Helping Women is how we're going to get there.